You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Evidence of climate change is all around us. Milder winters and longer summers are just a few tangible realities of climate change. But elsewhere in Canada, the effects of climate change are more serious. Mairead Carter, the director of the Climate Change Program at the David Suzuki Foundation, has details and joins us now by phone. Good morning, Mairead.
Good morning, Karen.
Apart from milder winters, what are examples of climate change seen in Canada?
Well, we're already beginning to see two very significant examples of climate change in Canada, and I'll just rattle some of them off. In BC, for example, our forest industry is suffering from, you know, a very severe attack of pine beetle, which has been attributed to our, the fact that we have much milder winters in BC these days. We haven't been able to kill off the bugs, and so that's contributing to the spread of the disease all the way through the forestry industry. So huge impacts on local economies, on jobs there. The other really significant example is in the Arctic, where we're beginning to see very significant levels of melting in the permafrost, which is contributing to a whole range of adverse effects, including the loss of polar bears, for example, which are already now an endangered species. But more significant than that is, you know, when you talk to Inuit elders in places like Iqaluit, what they tell you is that their entire cultural existence has been completely tied up in their ability to read the eyes to fish and to live in a very extreme and harsh environment. And when they have, when there is no ability to read the ice anymore because the ice is melting, it has, you know, it's cost lives. But it has huge implications for them as a culture and as a community. So we're beginning to see the effects right the way across Canada right now. But more importantly is that, you know, the modeling is beginning to show that there are going to be very significant effects on a whole range of industries, including the agricultural industry and the fishery industry, which is why one of the things that we have been campaigning very hard for is, over the last several years, is actually for the Canadian government to really move forward on implementing some great policies that will help us to address and arrest climate change, which unfortunately, you know, we're seeing now complete and utter intransigence from the federal government. It's a real shame.
What have governments, federal and provincial, been doing to address this problem over time?
Well, one of the complicating issues about this particular about climate change, particularly, is that there are jurisdictional tensions between the federal government and the provincial governments. Federal government is responsible for setting national domestic policy overall on things like climate change. It's also responsible for negotiating international agreements. But very often, the provinces are responsible for key implementation areas. So, for example, on this particular file, the provinces are responsible for energy and electricity policy, and the federal government is responsible for setting the overall direction. So while the federal government can provide real vision and real scope on climate change and really help provide a framework within which the provinces can develop their own policies and can provide leadership and can provide financial support, the provinces often have the responsibility of implementing some of the on-the-ground policies that would help us to address it.
Is the current Conservative government worse than federal governments have been in the past with respect to climate change?
I would have to say yes. I mean, you know, 6 months ago, when I was asked this question, I was a bit more cautious. We had seen with the Liberal government of, you know, that was 13 or 14 years in the making, and you know, almost a paralysis in, on the climate change front, not able to move forward at all. But in the last year of the mandate, ironically, in the last year of the last Liberal government mandate, there was beginning to be some movement. They were finally tabled a climate change plan that that provided really good a framework for really good vision. They had negotiated a lot of agreements with many of the provinces, lots of memorandums of understanding to help them really address greenhouse gas emissions. When this federal government was elected in January this year, though, we saw a very significant change. The first change that we saw was in their sort of a, announcement that we couldn't possibly meet our Kyoto targets, and therefore, you know, they'd be going for a Made in Canada plan. Then we saw a lot of the agreements that had been negotiated with the provinces were just torn up. They were, you know, they were abandoned, including, for example, there was a, there was an agreement with Prince Edward Island, who had who have got this really neat little plan to supply the rest of the maritime provinces with renewable energy, and so they wanted some assistance from the federal government to install an underwater cable to help them with their transmission. That agreement and that promise was, you know, was torn up. Then we saw a whole range of programs that had been really good programs, and you know, this was actually borne out by the Auditor General's report a couple of weeks ago, that helped individuals like you and I, for example, make our homes more energy efficient. So so the combination of abandoning Kyoto, refusing to work with the provinces on proven agreements to reduce greenhouse gases, and then the abandonment of some really important programs, federal programs, was, you know, has been a really sort of clear indication that, that they're really not interested in pursuing a really good conclusion to this file. Now, for me and for other people who work on this file, this is a very dangerous way to go. And the reason that it's dangerous is you know, there are many reasons. First of all, the scientific evidence is telling us that if we don't reduce our greenhouse gases by between 60, we say in the David Suzuki Foundation, our assessment is close to 80% by 2050, then we're going to be in very serious trouble. So that's issue number one. Issue number two is that we know that this is not going to be incremental. When you see the effects of climate change, it's not incremental. They tend to happen in fairly catastrophic events. And those kinds of events have enormous implications for communities, for jobs, for industries. And therefore, it's in our own best interest to act now and act quickly to see if we can arrest some of the impacts of climate change.
What do you think of the Conservatives' government's plan to introduce an air quality amendment to the Environmental Protection Act?
Well, God, this, you know, Stephen Harper was out in Vancouver last week, five of his ministers, and what he did was announce that they were going to announce something next week. You know, it was just a bizarre thing to do. But in terms of the content, it's unlikely that we're going to see very significant changes. You know, if we can see, you know, if we can have from the federal government a promise that that they are going to introduce real targets and real timelines for some of the criteria air contaminants like sulfur dioxide and nitrous oxide, and address some of the and implement some caps on some of the greenhouse gas emissions, then I think that we're going to be we'll be fine. But the problem is that when you just address clean air in cities, I mean, it's a great thing to do. But if you do it in the absence of addressing climate change at the same time, then you're not really helping matters very much at all. I mean, we know that rising greenhouse gases and climate change contribute to pollen counts in the summer. They contribute to asthma. So you can address one thing and hope to have a certain set of positive outcomes. But unless you look at the whole picture, you're just not going to make a significant difference. And this is the problem with an approach that looks at only addressing air quality in urban areas.
What do you want them to be doing?
I want, you know, there are a range of things that they could be doing. First of all, I want them to really make a public commitment to meeting the Kyoto target. I mean, if you're going to set and you address, as Stephen Harper has actually said, that he understands that we're going to have to make steep reductions in greenhouse gas emissions, then it means that you can't be setting long-term targets without short and medium-term targets as well. Otherwise, it's completely and utterly meaningless. We know this from many, many exercises in public policy in the past. You have to set targets and you have to make them. Starting with a cut to the subsidies that the oil and gas industry are getting in Alberta would be a really great start. Making sure that there is leadership so that the provinces also feel that they are up to the task is and that they are supported in making their greenhouse gas emission reductions would also be a really, really great start. And reintroducing some of the programs that we know have been delivering in terms of greenhouse gas reductions, like the energy efficiency programs, would be fabulous too. And these are things that can be done very quickly. And it's not rocket science we're asking for. We know where the reductions are going to come from. What it requires is leadership and will, and we don't appear to have either of those things at the moment.
What can people do if they want to put pressure on the Conservative government in this manner?
Well, they can write to the Prime Minister, and they can write to the Minister, and more importantly, they can write to their own local MP. And it doesn't really matter what political party they are from. I mean, it's important that all MPs hear a very strong message, and the message should be, you know, we need to protect our health here, we need to protect our environment, and we need to protect our jobs for the short and long term. So there's all sorts of political pressure that you can apply. There are many petitions that float around on the internet. You know, support those. Hold local meetings. Invite your city councillors to the local meetings. Invite your provincial representatives and your federal representative to come to the meetings and hear your concerns. Those are really great pieces of political action that you can do. But there are also some great things that we can do at home as well. I mean, when you talk about climate change, it's very hard to see, you know, how such a massive global problem can be addressed by, you know, things like changing a light bulb. But believe me, doing the things at home is very, very important. And there are all sorts of things that you can do. You know, change your high-intensity fluorescent bulbs to incandescent bulbs where you can. When you're going out to replace big appliances like fridges and washing machines and tumble dryers, make sure that you buy energy-efficient Energy Star appliances. I mean, they might be a little bit more expensive, but over the long term, they'll be cheaper for you because they'll be using less energy. Be great for the planet, too. Making sure that you compost your food scraps is also and recycle. These sorts of things really help with reducing greenhouse gas emissions.
Well, thank you for speaking with me today, Mareike.
Thank you so much, Karen.
I've been talking to Mareike Carter, the director of the Climate Change Program at the David Suzuki Foundation.